This is your Polycast for Tuesday, August 16th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, moving controversial art in the Capitol and neighborhoods organizing for change flexes its political muscle. Friends and family held a memorial service yesterday for former DFL Governor Wendell Anderson, who died last month at age 83. Anderson was a star on the U.S. Olympic hockey team in 1956. 14 years later, he was elected to governor at age 37. Governor Mark Dayton says a lot of what Anderson enacted in the 1970s is still in place today.
A great Minnesota governor. You know, one of the lasting changes he brought about for this state in terms of a more progressive sources of revenue, personal income tax, corporate income tax, rather than the property tax, the amount of funding that made available for schools and equalization of funding for schools all over the state was transformative.
Anderson's change to school funding was called the Minnesota Miracle, and it put him on the cover of Time magazine in 1973. Two historic paintings would be moved from the governor's reception room to less prominent locations in the state capitol. That's the recommendation of an advisory panel made up of historians, legislators, and other government officials. The group put forward the plan yesterday as part of a broader report on capitol artwork. Tim Pugmire reports.
The paintings recommended for relocation are titled Father Hennepin at the Falls of St. Anthony and the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux. Both paintings have been criticized for inaccurate portrayals of Native Americans. The subcommittee conferred with tribal leaders on the matter as part of its research and highlighted their advice in its report. DFL Representative Diane Loeffler of Minneapolis, a co-chair of the subcommittee, said members of the public also shared strong feelings about the art.
We have people who believe it's historically inaccurate in its portrayal, and some of it believes that it's a very complicated story that can't be told in one picture.
Specific complaints about Father Hennepin at the Falls of St. Anthony include its depiction of a semi-nude Native American woman and its symbolic religious overtones. The concerns with the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux centered on the event itself, which was the signing of a treaty that proved to be highly unfair to American Indians. Loeffler also noted the concerns about the painting's prominent location.
The governor's reception room, as you and the media know, is the backdrop for press conferences, for announcements. There's no ability for the public to get interpretation within that really ornate room. And so it was really not about moving it out of the Capitol, but moving it to a place where you can tell the complexity of the stories.
The report recommends relocating both elsewhere within the Capitol, but it does not suggest new locations. There are also no recommendations for replacement art. Republican Representative Dean Erdahl of Grove City, another member of the subcommittee, is against moving the paintings. Erdahl, a former history teacher, said educational opportunities would be lost if the art is placed in less visible locations. He's particularly concerned with the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux.
There's lessons to be learned from what happened when that treaty was made and the treatment of the Dakota people as a result of it. And so I think we need to bring that forward and that people need to know more about what happened. And it can, I believe, be enhanced by leaving the painting where it is with better interpretation.
During its research, the subcommittee also discussed the Civil War-themed paintings in the governor's reception room as well as the adjacent ante room. It concluded the Civil War paintings should remain. The report said the tradition of displaying portraits of past governors should continue, but in new ways that provide additional context and interpretation. Governor Mark Dayton, who chairs the Capitol Preservation Commission, said he still isn't a fan of the Civil War art or the governor's portraits.
There's just so much more to Minnesota than the Civil War and the governors, so it wouldn't be on my list of priorities to include in the Capitol, but again, that's a bigger decision than my preference.
The full commission accepted the art report but did not take further action. Members spent more time debating which government entity has the final authority to make capital art decisions than they did on the actual recommendations in the report. Most members are convinced the Minnesota Historical Society will have the final say on the matter. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein will speak tonight in North Minneapolis. Stein was invited by Neighborhoods Organizing for Change, or NOC. The Minneapolis-based nonprofit group has raised its profile over the last several years as it has taken on racial and economic disparities in Minnesota. Brant Williams has a look.
2 weeks ago, members of NOC and other activist groups shouted down members of the Minneapolis City Council after they voted to keep a proposed $15 an hour minimum wage charter amendment off the ballot. Council Vice President Elizabeth Glidden temporarily adjourned the meeting amid the chaos.
So we are happy to continue our business if we're able to conduct the meeting.
Later that same day, members of NOC engaged in a much less contentious meeting with Neil Kashkari, president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank. Group members spoke with Kashkari at NOC's headquarters in North Minneapolis about the economic gaps between people of color and white people in Minnesota. Kashkari told them he was glad to meet in person.
So I'm thrilled to be here, and I hope, I honestly mean this, this is the first of many visits. This is the beginning of a partnership. This is not a one-time event. I'll be very disappointed if this is a one-time event.
At the meeting, Kashkari also agreed to spend a day with a NOC member to experience what it's like to live on a low income. NOC Executive Director Anthony Newby says these two very different sounding events are not attempts to play what he calls the inside versus outside game.
The outside game is you raise a little trouble, and then the inside game was the real decisions happen. That's where the adult table is. And we think that's an old, antiquated model that, frankly, was never accurate or useful.
Newby says their mission is to bring about better living and working conditions for low-income and communities of color. And he says it's more important to organize communities to act than to meet with people in high places.
We know we can get a meeting with most elected officials in the state, for example. Most people that have their finger on the button of real structural power. But we're not confused by that being the same as moving the needle on some of these racial gaps. We're also not confused that the real power in this organization and this movement is real people on the street.
Since 2010, NOC has led or joined with other kindred organizations to successfully advocate for the elimination of lurking and spitting laws in the city of Minneapolis. It also pushed city leaders to enact an ordinance that makes it possible for part-time workers to earn paid sick time. NOC has also gotten attention for other things not really connected to their mission. In 2015, a large fire destroyed NOC's office along West Broadway Avenue. And in 2014, NOC received a lot of attention for what was called Pointergate after one of its canvassers, Neville Gordon, was photographed with Mayor Betsy Hodges as they pointed their index fingers at each other. A local TV news station reported the picture had angered police officials who said the gestures were gang signs.
What's the old saw, you know, that any publicity is good publicity?
Stephen Belton is the president and CEO of the Minneapolis Urban League. He says Pointergate probably raised the group's public profile, but didn't hurt them. The Urban League joined forces with NOC this spring in an initiative called the United Black Legislative Agenda. The agenda includes a list of legislative reforms to end the state's enduring racial disparities. The proposals, which range from changes in drug sentencing to new startup money for black-owned businesses, are aimed at lifting up Minnesota's African-American and African immigrant communities. Governor Dayton later signed off on a $35 million spending package meant to address some of the issues raised by the group. Belton says he and members of NOC's leadership have developed a good working relationship, and he says the two groups have similar missions.
We serve the same people, but we serve them in different ways. They have strengths as an organization that we don't have, and we have strengths that they don't have, and there's no reason that we ought to be seeing each other as competitors.
Belton says, for example, the Urban League, which recently celebrated its 90th anniversary, operates a variety of programs. And he says NOC's strength is its ability to organize people to rally and demonstrate around specific issues. NOC officials say the community forum with Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein is not an endorsement. The group held a similar event with then-Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders earlier this year. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.